time opening. We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
The all-seasonal soldier.
Yes, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie, Captain America, Winter Soldier. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Sarah Stratton.
Hello.
Dimitri Panos.
Hello.
In the booth is Marissa Serafini.
Hello.
And on a very special guest couch, shielded as ever, Phil Svitek.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Look at that. Nice. Let's talk.
We got Although the shield this is Dimitri's, I can't take credit
for
this.
I know, but you're wielding it, so.
I wouldn't really say I'm wielding, it's more wielding me, but for those of you watching.
Yeah, it's nice. So he's got a Captain America shield. Dimitri, you want to talk about that, or we got that?
Sure, yeah. It was a friend of Brenda's who works in creative marketing, and they did the original campaign for Captain America, the First Avenger.
Mm-hmm. Brenda and being your better half.
Much better. And so they know the geek that I am about this stuff. And one day, Brenda has this huge box and she goes, almost didn't bring this home. Mm-hmm. She's like, I can't believe that they're perpetuating this, but Dean from this agency thought you might like
That's
this.
Great.
So I opened it up and I was like, that is way cool.
Yeah,
so it's one of, I don't know how many, I don't care. But it is way cool. It's really big and yeah, it's awesome. It's a shield.
There it is.
The only thing it's missing is the straps in the back, but
I'm sure
for some more aggressive fighting.
Oh yeah. Well, it's got some heft to it, and
so
I wouldn't want that.
I
got to
ask. So that now that you have it in your lap, though, do you feel more patriotic? Do you feel like you can take on the world? Do you think you can handle
not without the strap?
No,
not without the strap.
You need the strap on. All right. So anyway, let's talk about the movie.
Isn't that nice?
So how did you feel about the movie, Sarah?
Oh, am I going to start?
Yes.
I was pleasantly surprised. I think the biggest thing that I took away from this film was I really enjoyed the change in like direction of the humor, how they went the more sarcastic route. That really sat well with me, and that's I think that you love the action. The action held up to my expectations. Mm-hmm. It was fast. It was fun. I liked that they spread out, and there was kind of an array of leading characters in this. Mm-hmm. But really what stuck with me was the humor.
Yeah.
I loved all of those little side notes,
yeah.
All of the tie-ins to the other films, all of the just fluffing off all the cheesiness. And
I thought that really contemporizes because the original one, obviously, were a different time. And that by adding that humor and that sarcasm and the ribbing of...
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that really contemporized it.
Well, first, I have to start off and say a major big shout-out to our friends at Cinemark Theaters who gave us a wonderful, great opportunity to see Captain America, the Winter Soldier at their brand new XD cinema at the Cinemark 18 in Los Angeles at the Howard Hughes Parkway. This was a conversion. They converted the screen, and I'm going to be straight up. They converted the screen from what was a true IMAX screen. I'm a big true IMAX, big fan. I was a little bit saddened to hear that it was going away. And, my good friends at Cinemark, they were like, well, you know what? Trust us. We're going to do this great job. And they sent me all the information on XD, and I had seen their XD presentation, which is a prestige large screen format, but I had not seen 3D. And what they did with the inside of this theater, I mean, you've got two rows of speakers on the sides and in the back. I even noticed, because I saw this movie twice in this format, there are speakers in the ceiling. I didn't know if you noticed that.
I didn't
right?
notice that. I noticed the rows of them.
They're in the ceiling as well. The screen, to me, looks apparently a similar size to what the IMAX was, or the true IMAX was. And I have to say that the XD presentation that Cinemark has afforded that theater right now knocks it out of the park. From the trailers, I was so impressed. The lumens, it's a digital projector, so you're getting a very bright 3D. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, you're wearing glasses, and they're dark glasses, so the bulb has to throw a brighter picture so that it registers. And one of the biggest complaints about 3D, believe it or not, is that some people say it's too dark, and that's because particular theater may not amp the ampage to the light bulb, so it gives off a perfect throw. This was amazing. There were so many times I felt like I could reach out and grab Cap's shield. It was bright. The sound was amazing from beginning to end. When this was over, Kevin Anagaro, who had seen this, his quote was, "Why would you want to see these movies like anywhere else?" And I know he was referring to the trailers, because we saw like Godzilla, we saw Maleficent, we saw just a good handful of trailers. I'm not doing it justice.
It's definitely the big
X-Men. Mm-hmm. We saw Planet of the Apes, done, and it was a great experience. So thank you, Cinemark, for that. It was amazing to be there on the inaugural night. There was a great crowd. So my thoughts on The Winter Soldier were, it was fantastic. I mean, outside of how we got to see it, you know, for this sequel, it's rare that a sequel can come in and up the original. And I was a big fan of the original. I loved how they captured that time period, and how they, you know, it's pre-Vietnam, you know, sensibilities and moral, and how to bring this character to present day, which they did in The Avengers. Mm-hmm. But now he has his own movie, and how do you do it so, like, it's not just your typical fish out of water? And by going via the political thriller kind of route, and having a superhero who is rooted in good morals, and somebody that can actually, who doesn't necessarily have, like, he's not like a Tony Stark. He's not like a wise guy or anything. He's not necessarily like Thor or anything. You know, he has his own set of American ideals that he was brought up with back. And how do you blend that into today? And he's truly become, for me, not a big Marvel fan, but Captain America is becoming one of my favorite Marvel superheroes. And in this movie, it was, you know, you had the Russo brothers. They did a great job directing. This movie was so exciting. And I think from a script level, it was very taut. It was smart, the way they introduced characters, the way they set up this political thriller. And then what they ended up doing with S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, that's crazy to me. It's, and how does it impact? I'm not caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV. I'm like three episodes behind, and I'm like, what the hell is going to happen there? And I think that they did a fantastic job. Chris Evans is great. Yeah, can't say enough good things about this movie. Great, and go see it in a large format. If you have XD in area, see it that way. It's awesome.
Over to Phil.
I enjoy seeing all the comments from fans. You know, there's apparently a huge debate which movie's better, Avengers or this.
Uh-huh.
And Avengers, you know, the top five list of Marvel movies. And it seems Avengers is the number one movie, but this is a very... you know, might as well call it a tie for first place with Captain America.
It's that close, huh?
Apparently. Yeah. I certainly enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, sometimes the Marvel movies, I relate to them more so than others, some of them. And I did enjoy this one. I love the, it felt very James Bond-esque at times. So I enjoyed that. And I thought, I like how they're utilizing Scarlett Johansson's character. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another debate about whether or not she should get her own movie as a starring. And you know what? I'm all for it. But at the end of the day, she does such a great job supporting these characters that she's almost like a starring character in the, you know what I mean? It's almost her movie as much as Captain America.
Yeah. As much as this was titled Captain America, I really felt like it was evenly dispersed between him, Winter Soldier, Scarlett Johansson, Nick Fury. I felt like they really gave a lot of people like leading roles. On top of that, I have to say that I agree that Captain America beat out the first one, because for me, Captain America was one of, I guess, my least favorite Marvel characters, and in this they really strengthened him for me and gave him more heart. And like I was, as Nietzsche pointed out, I didn't want to see just the fish out of water of the person, the one incorrupt guy who's always giving out the cheesy line. Like, I wanted him to learn to adapt and fit in. And so this movie did that for me. This movie surpassed the first one. And I was like happy, because now I feel like he is gaining more of a spot in amongst the team. Mm-hmm. So when the next Avengers comes out, like, I'll be excited for his character to be on screen, because I'm more of like a Thor fan and whatnot.
How about you?
Well, before we do that, Marissa.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Marissa saw it too.
I thought it was a really fun movie. Honestly, I wasn't the biggest fan of the first one, and the first Captain America movie, because I thought it was it had its good moments, but the whole movie as a whole, it wasn't that memorable. But coming into the second one, they had a nice blend of humor and action, and then there was heart and then drama. So I thought overall this movie captured all those different genres within this big overall action movie. And at the end of this movie, I wanted to go back to the first one, and then I wanted to go back to the other Marvel comic movies that we've seen. So I thought it did the great job of wanting us to see more.
Here's what I like about it. Is the fact that, again, it could stand alone, but if you know, there's Easter eggs throughout it, and it also brings out Easter eggs from old movies. You know, I was listening to a podcast yesterday on the Schmoes Know about how something in Iron Man 2, which people didn't like as a movie, but there's some Easter eggs that relate to Captain America. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it makes, you know, for those fans, it makes the movies that are not so great more memorable, because now things are tying in more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's creating this universe. But again, for a casual fan, which I, you know, unfortunately put myself as, so fans, you know, I know for those of you diehard, it allows entryway from any point at any period. I mean, if they're having movies planned out till 2028, as they say they do, you know, so some new fans eventually have to be amassed. And how do you get them in? Well, you know, you create a movie that can stand alone.
Yeah, you have
to. It does get harder, though. Because as opposed to the earlier movies where you only are throwing in like two Easter eggs about people, now they have the challenge of throwing in Easter eggs about every Avenger and about every situation that's going on. And they're having to kind of hint at where everyone else is or why they can't be there. And I think that for us, as if you've seen like any of the movies, this does stand alone. If you're really bringing someone fresh into this, it's still hard. I think that the plot was strong enough and they have like big enough character turns and whatnot that's compelling, but there's so much like small dialogue conversations that if you don't understand what it's referring to, it seems like throwaway lines, whether it's about like pills that like the Hulk was using or whatever. And I think that because I know someone who saw this and really had no context for those movies, and they were like, there was so much that I had no idea what they were talking about. And I'm like, you have to see at least like one or more, because it does have a strong plot, but to us it stands alone. I don't think to everyone it stands alone. I think that there's so many connections that they have
to
make.
But that's part of the beauty, is it's almost like choose your own adventure. No, it's true. However,
right.
You know, Marissa wanted to go back, but you know, let's say this was her first entry into the Marvel Universe, and well, now she can kind of figure out how she wants to plot out her journey in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and I think and we could talk about this later, but I think that this is the strength of what Marvel and Kevin Feige have done. I had a conversation with a good friend of mine, Jeff Kaufman, this past week, and he's like going, why is DC having such a hard time? Mm-hmm. Like why are they like fumbling, it seems? And I was like, well, you know, it's interesting, because the Dark Knight movie as a trilogy is a fantastic, great trilogy, great filmmaking in my opinion, and Christopher Nolan's story. Mm-hmm. It's great, but how does it fit into the quote unquote Disney canon? And it's almost like Warner Brothers and DC Comics canon. It almost seems that somebody is getting in the way of themselves of mapping this stuff out, because the DC universe is equally as rich in superheroes as this, and yet they can't, they're trying, and they, you know, Man of Steel was supposed to be the first one that's going to start that bridge to lead up to the Justice League, but yet Marvel, ever since Iron Man was a hit for them, it was almost like Kevin Feige brought in a crew and said, okay, we got to keep this going. How do we know that Iron Man's part of the Avengers, so we're going to lead up to an Avengers movie. How do we do that? Well, okay, we got to make a Thor movie, right? Oh, we got to make a Captain America movie. And we've already had, like, so, I don't know, poor Hulk is not quite getting his due yet, But it's like, and then what we're going to do is we're going to have fun with this. We're going to map this out. And not only are we going to have the Easter eggs, we'll make these standalone movies, but we got to make these the best movies possible. We can't falter, because once we make a really bad movie, then people aren't going to care. We're going to have to work extra hard. Add to that, we're going to make webisodes. We're going to like put Agent Coulson in, you know, a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer. We're going to make, like a webisode of Agent Carter. We're going to do all these little things that, if you're above and beyond the casual fan, mm-hmm. you can watch and get this entertainment and put pieces of the puzzle together. We're going to include Captain America's shield in Iron Man 2 in Tony Stark's laboratory. We're going to mention all this stuff, but yet the mainstream audience can go, and mm-hmm. we want to grab women. We want to get men. We're definitely going to go for kids. You know, we want kids to do this, and who knows, maybe it'll perpetuate them reading or going back to other movies or wanting to see more. And what Kevin Feige and Marvel have done cinematically, I mean, just this week, it came out that the Marvel Universe, the Marvel franchise, has surpassed James Bond, mm-hmm. which has been out for 50 years, as the highest grossing cinematic franchise in history right now, just with however many movies since Iron Man up till now, which is about 6 years. It's amazing what they do, and I think that's where they succeed. They really put pen to paper and they map things out, yeah. and they talk to their writers, their directors. It doesn't hurt when you get somebody like geek god Joss Whedon to come in and help you map out, because he's a comic book girl. You know, he loves DC and Marvel, but now he's well within the Marvel family, and he helps carve out, okay, this is how we'll go continuity wise so those who are paying attention get it, and those who don't, like a little kid, at, you know, when he's 10 years old, he's not necessarily getting it, but man, do I love
and when he's fascinated.
Yeah, and when we saw do I love it when little kids are dressed up as Captain America, they have the little homemade shields, and they're going to the movies. I mean, that's just, it's great. DC, Warner Brothers, look, they do a lot of great things.
We'll talk about that controversy.
Yes, yes.
Save that for later.
So... yeah, I think they just they're great at mapping this stuff out and keeping loyal fans while building on Captain America, the first movie. I mean, this made $95 million opening weekend. Like the first one, I think made third. I'll have to we'll look it up.
Yeah,
but
I don't know what it made. But yeah, it wasn't this, but yeah,
no, it wasn't this. So
it was a good movie.
Yeah,
it just didn't have any. This one was just far surpassed it.
And all of them are, I mean, I think
they really know how to make, they know their product, they know their audience, and they really serve their constituents, so to speak. I mean, they make the movies.
Well, I want to, you know, if we're talking about that, again, because it's part of the preconception and the planning part, mm-hmm. It was Robert Downey Jr. who said, like, you know, because so many people try to go after mass audience, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how many ideas, John, do we get pitched mm-hmm. for TV shows of like, yep. I'm going after the female demographic, but I'm also going after this, and you know, we're going to add elements of this, so we appeal to this demographic. And it was Robert Downey Jr. who said that in the Marvel Universe, their core is the comic book fan. Yeah. If they don't grab the comic, that's it.
Yeah.
That's their goal.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, then they failed. They're going after that niche market. Mm-hmm. But it so happens because they are obviously able to, you know, get that, serve those people, and it can go beyond. Mm-hmm. But too many people just do a disservice by trying to be so broad, mm-hmm. it never mm-hmm. works out.
Yeah, and I think Marvel has taken great what they've been able to do, and we'll talk about it here too. I mean, we'll talk about the Russo brothers, right? I mean, these people primarily come from a television background. They did a couple of movies, but they're not movies that I would associate with a Marvel mm-hmm. action movie, Anthony and Jerry Russo. It's a great risk putting a movie like Captain America, which is supposed to perpetuate and lead into Avengers. Let's give these guys a shot. Well, they did that way back when with Iron Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, they gave it to Jon Favreau. Yeah. And I just remember people scratching their heads going, this is
really?
The guy that did,
you did
Made and Elf and like Jon Favreau, huh? And look what he ended up doing. And then when you give another franchise to like Shane Black, mm-hmm. it's like, didn't this guy like put himself into seclusion? Didn't he go away? And he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Yeah. I know he wrote like Lethal Weapon and some big movies, but to give him the reins of an Iron Man movie, they take great risk. Now, I'm sure their paychecks like, you know, the Russo brothers, I'm sure, you know, they probably have a nice back end deal. I don't know what their paychecks are, but just giving it to people who are doing Arrested Development and to say, make a political thriller action movie. And they're like, okay. And look what they do. They pick, they farm fantastic talent. Thor was directed by a guy who's worked on one of your favorites, Game of Thrones. You know, I mean, they farm great talent. And I think whoever Marvel is picking, they're directors I want to see later on down the line.
They have a wonderful eye. It's like how people pick, like, the underdog in sports. It's just like they've created this wonderful team.
Amazing.
Yeah, would you have that eye to see those those things in TV that capture people and can translate into these films.
And how do, like, you know, you're going to make Thor. Who do we pick as a director? Oh, let's pick that Shakespeare guy, Kenneth Branagh. You know, he was in a Harry Potter movie. Mm-hmm. He would be a great action movie director. And look what happens. I mean, they do a, you know, I can't say enough about it, but they do a great, their farm system is great. Is really, really good. And they try to keep them involved. Apparently the Russo brothers are going to do Captain America 3, which will film shortly after Avengers Age of Ultron. And like I said, it doesn't hurt when you get Joss Whedon on board. Mm-hmm. And again, Joss Whedon at that time period was not a fully certified box office cinematic director. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did Serenity.
TV. Yeah, he had not cinema, not theater, but he had his huge TV.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, they're smart people over there. I mean, they're doing a good
job. Very smart. And I think that it's true. They have to just keep putting out these wonderful movies and it's growing their audience base. What I think is going to be difficult is just the fact that it's so fast paced. People want things so quickly.
Yeah.
Like we're wrapping up. We just saw Captain America with the Winter Soldier. And they're already talking about 3. Like these people aren't getting a breath and they are using the same team to bring on. And this is all the same actors. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, that's so exciting. These people have this career. The other end is that this could be easily 20 years of their life. And to keep them engaged and excited on these very demanding roles that not only they have to appease this giant audience now, but also physically, the training they have to undergo for these roles, the time they have to spend in them. It's crazy. I mean, we were just talking about people signing 9-year contracts and getting brought back. And you have, like, they're each one, they have to go back. And for certain people who don't have their contracts, it's getting them to re-sign on over and over and over again. And I think that's going to be a big challenge. To really just keep that energy. Because I think you can say to yourself, oh, I love this. But to physically keep up with these movies that are so action-packed and just demand more and more because people want to heighten the action.
Yeah.
Like, no one can sit back and have, oh, we're going to have a relaxing Avengers movie so the actors can have a break. Like, they have to keep pushing limits.
Well, I'm sure they're hoping that the technology will improve so much where they don't have to worry so much about the
action. But, like, for this Captain America, the Russo brothers, they wanted more live action.
Sure.
Yeah. So they tried to stay away from CGI as much as possible. And they liked the look of it, and it's obviously a hit. And when things work, I think you keep trying to do them. And that's not as reliant on.
Yeah, and we were talking about just before the start of this podcast, too. I think what's going to be interesting, and Phil, you had brought it up, and it's going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen.
Captain America is going to age.
So isn't Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, one of these days, somebody's going to say, you know, okay,
they can't
thank
be Hugh Jackman.
Yep. Thank you. You know, I had my stint, bring somebody else on. Now, then it comes a time, the dreaded word reboot, do they continue on? Do they make it like a James Bond? But James Bond's strength lies in, for the most part, each movie is a standalone movie, for the most part. These have been tied in so much. Do you continue to perpetuate that, and how will it work?
Well, I mean,
if we don't see Robert Downey Jr.
But look how, I mean, granted he wasn't the main character, but look at from Iron Man 1 to Iron Man 2. Pardon me for getting his name, his character name wrong. I'm sure the fans are going to hate me for this, but his sergeant buddy, I can't remember his name. Played by Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle, but in Terrence Howard.
Yeah, exactly. So they just, boom, one line. Yeah, it's me. Get over it. And then they went on.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
But, I mean, they do have the opposite end where if you look at how Edward Norton had his original individual Hulk and then when they were placed in, to me, like as a fan, I was upset. because I loved Edward Norton.
Sure.
And, like, I'm still can't quite get over that. The, and I
which
think
one?
The
Eric Bana one or the one because...
It's more because I love Edward Norton and I like the consistency. And I think that that's part of the reason that they have stayed away from Hulk for so long, because it did create so much controversy, and that was just changing, like, one thing. On top of that, I mean, what they did display in this movie that could be a hint is they are going to the technological way of, like, aging people mm-hmm. instead of through age makeup. And they can reverse do that. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
no, they can, but physicality-wise.
I know. I mean, you know,
your bones start to
creak. DiCaprio, like,
you know, here's the thing. This isn't Benjamin Button.
Yeah, they'll figure out a way.
They could figure it out.
they'll figure it out. They've done it. I mean, how many Batmans have we seen? They've figured it out.
No, they didn't, though. I mean, it's funny that you say that.
No,
because
they eventually did. I mean,
well, they had
obviously,
to.
Obviously, they will sink or swim. And then when they sink, they'll go, okay, we need to redo something else. And they'll bring somebody else in because... Yeah. The audience will be there because they mm-hmm. want this stuff. If they mm-hmm. if there's a screw up, you know,
yeah,
they'll change.
You know, and it'll just be I will be. It'll be very interesting the year that that happens mm-hmm. and who will go first. Will it be like, you know, will it be Robert Downey Jr.?
Yes.
Like, you know, you think so?
Yes.
All right. So is that what the vote is? The consensus that Robert Downey will say,
I'm going to
say
that
Robert. Anymore?
I don't.
Robin within the Dye Avengers
Jr.'s
universe,
body might eventually say, like he's been kind of crazy in his life. So
it's true,
you know. I mean, I wish him the best, and I hope he stays in this as long as possible. But if you have him, and then you have these guys who are 20 something coming
right.
in there,
but I'm guessing he'll be the first one to realize, you know, that, yeah, it's time for me to.
Yeah, we can't come to terms in the contract.
Or whatever. Yeah. Or he'll just realize that, yeah, this doesn't look, yeah, I don't look like I used to. And
yeah.
I don't want to do, because, you know, let's face it, he's also a very talented actor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure he wants to do other things.
Sure.
And at some point, he'll go, yeah, I've done that enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point.
And it'll be that first movie, that first Iron Man movie, or whether they make it an Avengers movie in mm-hmm. which Tony Stark is not Robert Downey Jr., mm-hmm. it's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think Marvel, listen, thus far, they have not shown that they couldn't handle something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they have to be thinking of the contingencies because, yeah. you know, these people, again,
Geordi,
things change.
Geordi, thank you, by the way.
Geordi. Oh.
That's his character name. Took me a while, but I got there. But they figured that out really easily.
Right.
You know, boom. They'll find a way.
One way is by adding new characters.
Yeah.
And new wonderful characters. And I think that they did do a really good job of that in this movie.
Okay. Speaking of this movie, let's get back to it.
Yeah, okay.
Take a detour to Marvel World. So we're going to talk just this movie in regard to. I think we've done enough about the Marvel World. Okay. So let's talk about how this came to the screen. What do we know of the Winter Soldier? How did this character, this particular script come to light?
Well, from what I've read and what I understand, it came, like, as I said, as we've been talking about, these are like boom, 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 boom. It's so as soon as I believe it, the other one wrapped, like 2012, they started writing this. And they drew from the Winter Soldier, which had his own comic and who has his own full comic book life. So he is, like, drawn from that area. He's not just pulled out. But they wanted to create this more thematic dealing with the corruption of government, dealing with... like the mm-hmm. drone type thing, mm-hmm. like which we've seen a lot of recently.
Yeah, especially the whole argument about what is security and if you have to lose freedom in order to gain security
and how
and
does
that stuff.
Humanity react mm-hmm. to that. And I think that that is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I think that people are really engaged by it because it's tying into the current circumstance,
yes.
which mm-hmm. I find is an interesting parallel because the original movement of writing of this, I believe, was during like the Cold War. Where people were having their own ideas about where corruption mm-hmm. lied and
the Red Scare and all those
yes
kinds of
and like there was all of this like dissection going mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. and so it's an interesting parallel to how it is now mm-hmm. and where government exists now and how they're kind of being able to draw from both of those worlds to create this film when it is a time crossing movie mm-hmm. because obviously the nature of Captain America and the Winter Soldier's
yep.
like past so they really were tying all of this together mm-hmm. in the script. And I think that that punches it well, especially for me on the who decides to have that trigger. And to me, I was a little bit thinking back actually to RoboCop, mm-hmm. where I'm like, this sure. is very much in
the original or
technology apocalypse. But I mean, what else do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, when it was presented with the writers and the Russo brothers too, I mean, one of the things that I really loved about this movie, mm-hmm. Is as I was watching it, there were a couple of scenes and Robert Redford being one of them, but there was the scene with when we meet Zolo and all the old computer banks. Okay. One thing that that hit me was like, wow, this is a little bit 3 Days of the Condor-ish, which is a great political thriller that starred Robert Redford.
One of the best.
Right. Exactly. And at that time, you know, the paranoia. And that's one of their movies that they drew their inspiration from in doing this. And again, what I really loved about it, and I'm a huge fan of the first Avenger, of the first Captain America movie, because again, I love that time period. It was fantastic. And it did something that the other ones haven't done. It actually ended on a very sad note, you know, because he has the woman that he's going to, you know, he's falling in love with and you want this. And then he ends up being frozen in time and all that stuff. And it ended in a sad way, but it had all of those. Again, I said pre-Vietnam, it was minus all that cynicism. And it was like, yay. It was like, we are going to fight for the cause. There was an honor to fighting.
A righteousness.
Right. There was a righteousness, but it was a privilege to do so. People did come back heroes. And, you know, and that's what Steve Rogers was all about. And, you know, I really loved how they captured that. So bringing it here, you know, I think that Ed Brubaker had written the comic book, The Winter Soldier. And I'll be straight up, I haven't read it, but I have since ordered it on Amazon. So, but because this movie has inspired me now to really read Captain America, especially the old ones. And, I think that bringing it into an age now today, as the Russo brothers have said, you can't make a political thriller. Like, in order to make it resonate, you have to draw from what might be happening today. And when you look at what is going on today, I had found this article regarding the Russo brothers. The headline, this comes from Mother Jones, Captain America, The Winter Soldier is about Obama's terror suspect kill list, say the film's directors. And that's taken from today's headlines. And when we talk about drones, that's what Operation Insight. It's, you know, instead of drones, we get two big helicarriers.
It's a giant drone.
Yeah, it's three of them who will, like, within a matter of minutes, it was going to set to wipe out. That's a current topic today, our security, our privacy. And again, how does that clash with Captain America? It was a great scene with Fury. It was like, you look at that as freedom, and I look at that as fear. And I love how he doesn't change his moral compass. He still takes those sensibilities, which, you know, whether you agree or disagree with, I just find that they're honorable characteristics in a superhero. Like, he's not a darkened character. Like, there was no big tragedy other than he was frozen in his life. And I think that by the writers and the directors bringing him into today and not making it an oaf being out of time, they said, how does his mindset
work today?
Work today with everything that's going on. And to me, that's why it's a good political thriller. There were certain things that happened and twists that I didn't see coming. And I was like, wow, I'm really into this movie. And
that's also the challenge of this particular, for me, the story is because you have this character, your lead character, who has these moral center. Well, he has this moral center. And there are very little shades of gray for him because of his character. I mean, that's the thing.
Sure.
I mean, so you have a difficult time. What's the conflict for him? Because he has no moral ambiguity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a challenge to try to get some sort of dramatic tension going on because you know the guy's always going to do the right thing. He's always going to do the honest thing. Because he even says, I always tell the truth. He can't lie. I mean, so it's a very difficult challenge.
So the interesting layer that they do add, because he is so like black and white shit, is his relationship with his friendship with who the Winter Soldier was. Mm-hmm. That's where his gray area comes into play. Because if he did just see Bucky or the Winter Soldier, however you want to name him, as black and white, it would either I have to kill him because that would be the right thing to do, or like, I guess not kill, but like put him in prison or something. And instead it is that gray area of when he's going to try and save him.
Right.
When he's not going to quite fulfill his possession.
I'm not gonna fight
but be
you.
A good friend and he's going to stand down and surrender and let whatever happen. And so I think that his gray area definitely comes in terms of his relationships. Because it's a difference between like, this is duty, this is right and wrong, and then these are
And the themes are all, it's mm-hmm. all about friendship. There's a whole big thing about trust in there and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But I wanted him to push the envelope more. I wanted him to actually have a more difficult choice. The argument that Robert Redford, Pierce makes is I can save 7 billion people by right. taking out these 200 million.
Right.
Wouldn't you do it? But he makes that argument to a third character, I mean, tertiary character that we're not really. And I wanted my main guy to struggle with that. Now, however he handles it. But why not present that moral argument to your main guy?
Well, didn't he present it to Nick Fury?
Well, no, because he said it to the guy who said, yeah, who's got the button? And that other guy threw the glass.
So it was to him.
And I'm going, why? Even to Nick, it would have been more interesting. Well, but it's like your main character, give him the most moral problem, dilemma mm-hmm. to deal with.
Well, you know, but I think we knew where Captain America stood.
Of course. You know? Of course. I know where he stood. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. That's why you have a very challenging movie. And now, regardless of a Marvel movie, mm-hmm. regardless of a comic book, I'm just talking straight, strict script writing. You want your main character to have that's to deal with the most difficult conflict that you can imagine. And that is it. Here mm-hmm. I am, a moral being, mm-hmm. always doing the right things. And that's, it's the same argument in Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
You know, save one. One of the
many. needs of the many
outweigh the needs of the few. And they gave that to Spock and to Kirk, and they had to deal with that.
Yeah,
and here we have some guy we don't even care about dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And that was why did you do that?
I think that also they have led that up that situation hasn't really been cleared up for me. I mean, they obviously did take down the three ships and like. You know, people were killed, yada, yada. But who still owns this switch? Who still has this power? Yeah. Is it really, mm-hmm. like, it's all been led up to, there's people at the figureheads who are still controlling all this, mm-hmm. and it's not really humanity who's fighting for itself. It's still being elected these people, which in this case is now going to be, like, superheroes,
right.
to be in control of that switch. So mm-hmm. I think that it may be... It was brought up in this film to be really addressed later.
Yeah, because be they're going to Captain America, and they're going to all
get
the heads of Hydra, but there's somebody behind Hydra.
Exactly.
Well, but there is still, you know, and that was a very fascinating way too in which to end was mm-hmm. that the first post credit button or mm-hmm. the midway post credit button. Mm-hmm. You know, Hydra still exists.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
and something behind
there. Yeah, Hydra still exists.
I really don't like the Hail Hydra, by the way. I'm just throwing that out there. It just bothered me.
Hydra still exists.
Yeah.
There's still,
what
you know,
is this
still
sinister organization that, yeah, who is that?
Mm-hmm. And
again, because I don't know that world.
Right. You know, and we do know, though, that is, you know, we can extrapolate that was Loki's staff mm-hmm. that had a little mm-hmm. bit of the Tesseract, and
right.
they were testing it on
mm-hmm.
these
as
two
usual.
Twins yes. and
create
you
miracle
know,
children.
So you know, so that's still there. It'll be it'll be very interesting. Again, sorry, folks, I haven't caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I don't know how it affects that universe.
That's all right, and I'm going to say right now. We are talking about a movie. If you're a big fan and you want to know all about Marvel, that's not what this is.
Yeah, so but it's going to affect Age of Ultron in one way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So what they set forth in this movie mm-hmm. has like big ramifications on the cinematic Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And I think it was very bold, very, very courageous to do. You know, I think kudos again. Just kudos to mapping it out because obviously
I think they did a fabulous job.
They have a game plan.
Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to what Phil had said about. By the way, Phil had to take off, so that's why he's not here. The thing about anybody can have their own adventure in this. It's kind of like having one of those, games online where you can go here, you can go here, you can. Did he die? Did he live? You know, you can.
It is
almost that kind of thing, which I think is fabulous. And interesting what you said, Sarah, your friend not really knowing what was going on. Coming into this, I went, I didn't think you would need to know the Marvel Universe or even to know Captain America, even to see the first one. I think you, I thought
my friend
anybody
really understood
would get
like
this.
The overall big plot.
But there's just some
like,
inside.
There's so many, like, there's tons of like secondary conversations that aren't happening amongst the big action. They're just those mm-hmm. small one on one talks, whether mm-hmm. it's between Nick Fury and Captain America or Scarlett Johansson, mm-hmm. you know, there's just these little conversations that are so much based in Easter eggs that I think if you don't understand those Easter eggs, you get a little like,
what was that about?
Okay, why aren't we talking about Hydra?
Yeah, okay.
Hydra's really important. Yeah. This is like the end of the world. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That's where they were getting a little lost.
I understand.
But I don't think that's the general public, because obviously these are such huge movies that most people have seen at least one other of them, so they understand that.
And the Easter eggs to me are so like, they don't necessarily impact the plot. Like a throwaway line of something like Hugo Strange. To anybody else, nobody knows who that is, but just hearing Strange, it's like, that's Doctor Strange. That's like, and so you get that reference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're noticing things like on the kill list, Tony Stark's name comes up on the kill list. And when they talk about Bruce Banner and these pills were to help him out and blah, 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 and they didn't work. You know, again, you don't, if I didn't know who that was, so be it. I just know that there were pills developed and this guy, this doctor developed them and they didn't work. But knowing Bruce Banner. So it's really funny, too, when we talk about the writers of this movie. They were asked, they were asked, I got this, the Hollywood Reporter, Winter Soldier writers Marvel wanted the biggest ending possible. Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely say Marvel studio head Kevin Feige urged them to craft an ending that would be massive. And they were like, okay. And he says, Kevin doesn't want us to take small steps, so we'll take big swings. And sometimes he'll pull back and sometimes he'll add to it and say, no bigger. He'll go, let's take down all of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they're
that was
okay.
Well, like, when I saw what they were doing, I'm watching them going, they're gonna take down S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
How do you come back from that?
Yeah, how did...
That's exactly my point is...
Say in a warehouse.
That's extremely dramatic. Nobody's expecting that kind of thing. Yeah. And that's what I loved about this movie is that you took down... That's like blowing up the Star Trek Enterprise. It's like, how do you come back from that, right? But that's kind of the same reason why I wanted my main character to have the main moral conflict. And he didn't. And I went, you can make that leap there and kill S.H.I.E.L.D. and then not make Captain America have to deal with this?
Well, he made the decision, though to wipe it out.
I understand that, but you didn't give him the moral argument, the conflict. It was left to somebody else. It's like, no, give that to your main guy. Let him struggle with it for a bit, because then we get to see our guy deciding how does he come to that moral conclusion? What affects him? Because that was me. Was the one thing that I wanted out of this is that. Because you got a guy that he's so good, like, you know he's going to always do the right thing.
I definitely get, I think, more of my arc self-introspection from Nick Fury in this movie. And he has a ton of screen time for, like, someone who, like, he's been in almost all the movies, I think.
Almost.
But it's the same arc, the same difficulty you have with Superman.
I feel like out of all of them had the most screen time in Captain America 2. And also we had the biggest insight kind of into his perspective and his life and the struggles that he goes through. And I think that added... They had to do that because the only thing that Captain America has is these friendship relationships that struggle.
I know. That for me was the message. And even the friend thing. It's like, okay, you say you don't want to kill your friend because he's your friend. Well, then, okay. Then if you don't kill your friend, all these people die. And that didn't happen either because that was already taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Well,
like, give him a moral problem.
Well, again, is it a moral problem? Because here's the deal. We knew from the beginning when Fury shows Cap, this is insight. I'm going to show you something that it's not on your level yet, but you know, this is insight. This is what it does. And even Fury says, hey, you know, this is going to be great. And, you know, he says... That's not the freedom that I grew up in. And,
I understand
to me, that.
But the same was about the friendship. He discovers that Bucky is the
Winter Soldier.
It's like, great. Okay. That's terrific. Falcon even says, you know, when you're going to have to go at him. And he pretty much decides right then, I'm not going to kill him.
Yeah.
So he's never left. So it's like, okay. So there's no surprise. There's no particular conflict. There's no particular drama because we already know he's going to do the right thing unless he thinks he's not going to kill him and go, look, if you don't kill him, all these people are going to die. Now it's like, what do I do? The guy, my one friend who I lost, who I almost caused his death because I couldn't save him in my mind, in Captain America's mind, he feels responsible.
Yeah.
And now it's either my friend or all these people. Mm-hmm. What do I do now?
And it's not only your one friend, it's your one friend from
exactly.
your world.
Because everybody else, you know, is either dead or dying.
Yeah, right. It's like the only person who could really understand.
Exactly.
You.
And I go, now that would have been, you know.
But who says that won't be.
But what
that
I'm
won't
saying,
be brought
it has
up
to be,
in Captain America 3.
Agree. I agree with you
or
completely.
Winter Soldier.
And I would love it. But for me, as, you know, strictly as a movie. The movie has to stand on its own, and if I'm looking at a script, I'm going, okay, give you want your character, your main character, to arc in some fashion, and I'm going, you give him something to do, give him something to play, give him something to struggle with.
Interesting.
And I'm going, just, you know, because I thought it was a great movie. I loved this movie.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
thought it was terrific.
I wow. See, like, I love it when he raves about a movie. I do, because no, I do. I really do. I love it when
I
he
had
says,
a blast.
I love a movie. Yeah.
This is the kind of movie, and if I'm going to see this kind of movie, I want it to be this. It's
yeah.
big, it's fun, it's fast, it has
looks
all the stuff
wonderful.
You were talking about with the yeah. comedy and the I loved the way she ribbed him like crazy about dating and all
oh
that.
Oh my
other
god.
Stuff. It's hysterical. Yeah. And I thought it was wonderfully balanced and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, yeah, but you had the opportunity to really have your main character have a mm-hmm. struggle. Have a conflict to deal with, a conscience mm-hmm. to have to, and you took it away from him. And I go, why do that? This could have really, the external of mm-hmm. all this craziness going on could have been the reflection of the stuff he had to be dealing with on the inside.
Well, you know, the other thing though, and I'll bring up because we hadn't talked about it, because there was a part in the movie where he really didn't know, when he goes to visit, Falcon, right now I forget his name,
Anthony
Mackie's character. Mm-hmm.
Sam Wilson Falcon.
When he goes to visit Sam and he's asked, he's like, well, what do you do? He goes, you know, I and he even says it to Agent Clark there, to his old girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he even says it to her, like, I don't know where I fit in this
yeah.
world and I don't know if I can serve. Like, right. I don't know if I can serve mm-hmm. in this world because so many things have changed mm-hmm. and what do I do? And I think for Captain America, you know, it's obvious. Like, I'm going to do it in my way. And I'm going to do it in, you know, because I think this is the right way. This isn't might is right. This is what's right is right. Mm-hmm. And I got to stand for truth, justice.
I agree. I love that. I really love that. I just wish I wanted.
You wanted more.
I wanted to see that.
It's fascinating.
Exactly.
I didn't think of it that way.
Great argument. I'm going, please, you know, have this. He's such a great character.
Yeah.
Especially if you have that conversation going on with all the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you see this poor guy. I mean, he's like, I don't fit here.
Yeah.
I have to fight. And I have to walk away because I don't fit in this world.
Right.
Everybody I know is dead or dying. And a guy like me no longer belongs in this world.
Right.
And he has to find his way back.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows about, I mean, nobody is living. I mean, everything is tainted and shades of gray and moral ambiguity everywhere.
Right.
And he could be the one seminal voice that says.
Right. And it's interesting too because if you
good
look at the Avengers,
more time.
Yeah,
yes, but I mean, each movie should have that kind of.
No, it's an interesting. No, I think you bring a very fascinating argument to the table, and it's interesting because again, for me, anyways, like you know, my favorite superhero is Batman,
mm-hmm.
you know. But when you talk about a dark character from mm-hmm. a person who comes from darkness, right?
Yeah.
And again, when you have Christopher Nolan's mm-hmm. like Dark Knight comes out and they address that,
yeah,
you know, and that's that kind of struggle, you know, mm-hmm. could
yes.
make a superhero.
And
he's
willing to be the bad guy for the greater good.
Which is great. But for me, what's a breath of fresh air with the Captain America? Like, even like Tony Stark has his darkness too. Because he did not start off being that way. Mm-hmm. He didn't start off being Iron Man. He was he was a dick.
He was arrogant.
Oh, arrogant.
Right.
Kind of
stuff,
yeah. So,
it makes him a lot of fun.
It.
Right. And that's, and that's fun. I get it. But for me, it was sort of a breath of fresh air. To have a superhero mm-hmm. that doesn't need to be dark. Like, a superhero can be a superhero.
Yeah.
And,
I don't want him to be dark. I hope I'm not giving you that impression.
No. What you're going with from a screenplay standpoint and mm-hmm. about the story arc mm-hmm. and conflict, I get what you're saying. I do. I'm just like, for me, I found it refreshing that we have a superhero character that
I love it.
That, like, I mean,
he's the opposite.
And he's
of
not an alien.
Stark.
Right. He's,
so
which is why they sometimes
which
along.
Makes me want to
exactly.
go back to watching the Avengers because their rapport, you know, was great.
That's what I love their rapport in that movie.
Yeah. And then you have Agent Coulson who really, you know, and that's great too because in Avengers you had Agent Coulson who, amongst all these superheroes that can do these great things, the one that he admires the most is Captain America. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I've got my car, he's got the cards.
Yeah.
And it's really.
The interesting thing is, though, that I feel like this movie, maybe it was just because it was such a good movie in whole, this validated Agent Coulson's, like, approval of him.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting because it works in reverse. Because, yes, I can go back and watch The Avengers and be like, okay, I understand more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When it first was presented, though, it seemed like in the first Avengers, it was like, oh, we need to do this because the audience isn't as on his side. So we need to put someone in this mix mm-hmm. on his side. I'm getting it more, which is why I really love this movie and why this movie
that may be why they did
improves
that.
Upon the first one for me.
Yeah.
And it certainly builds on everything.
It builds.
Gaining yeah, it does. People on
but it's what
side.
A good sequel really mm-hmm. should do.
It should be, exactly.
Right?
It should be.
Like, it's not just making yeah. it bigger, bolder, mm-hmm. bigger action.
Or a repeat.
Exactly. Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It should build. And that's why I had conversations, you know, with my friend Ryan. And we were talking about, wow, Captain America is becoming a favorite of mine. Like, mm-hmm. I love watching his cinematic exploits thus far, and I love what he stands for. I love where he represents in the, like, it really, like, I went to Amazon and I looked up Winter Soldier because mm-hmm. I want to know more from the comics, because I know that they have to vary it for cinematic reasons or mm-hmm. and the death of Captain America. I just right. wanted to know a little bit more and just read about him and see, like, you know, are they taking from, like, say, Ed Brubaker's vision mm-hmm. of when he wrote the Winter Soldier, like, do they translate Captain America's moral fortitude mm-hmm. in the, you know, because I've never read them before. So that's an inspiration when yeah. you can see a movie and go back, not just cinematically, but want to read the books, because you're yeah. a big Thor fan.
I love
and,
Thor, yeah.
Right,
Thor's
and so
probably my favorite.
Yeah,
maybe it's because yeah. I also do like Shakespeare, and so it's
that's the hair.
Maybe, maybe it's that. I don't know. But let's talk a little bit about the Winter Soldier okay. versus Captain America in this film, because I thought that, you know, it's always playing with that two sides of the same coin, mm-hmm. and them being from the same place, and on top of that, knowing each other. But just, I found it fascinating that they portrayed him to be the dark version of Captain America, the lost person who had the potential to do this. And just, like, even the physical representation with the shield and the arm and the ability.
The long hair.
Yeah. No, but it's just that who's defending and who's the aggressor and mm-hmm. that action that carried through the whole film, I thought was done visually very yeah. well and symbolically well.
Absolutely.
I think that they set up the turn mm-hmm. for the Winter Soldier for
yeah.
the sixth film.
Yeah.
You could see it, and they placed it very strategically throughout. I thought yeah. that it was wonderful timing for him, how mm-hmm. they, like, revealed him as the bad guy, but then took it back and revealed that he was a pawn. Mm-hmm. And then they kept adding those layers of, did he really know how much control that he had? Mm-hmm. But also adding those subtleties. Like, I remember one moment that really affected me in this film was when he was in the brainwashing chair.
Right.
And you could see how lost he was. But then he had that split second of, they were like, okay,
wipe him.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't fight it.
Yeah.
He just...
Which I thought was a very interesting choice.
Yeah. It was a very interesting... He just took it and bit it. And that,
oh my God, how much of this man is lost?
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. how crazy is everything yeah. in his head that what yeah. he's desiring yeah. is this pain, which he's obviously come to recognize or understand or be trained to do. And I just thought that the layering of his character was
yeah.
just
yeah.
so interesting and so well paced.
And it's funny, too, because it really does go back to the first Avenger. Because, and here's, like, it's very interesting mapping out. Mm-hmm. So, and again, like, if you paid more attention, like, again, my friend Ryan had not seen Captain America, mm-hmm. and we watched it, and he knew the casting of this one. So, but in the first movie, you know, we know that our Steve Rogers was this scrawny little kid mm-hmm. who all he wanted to do was serve. He mm-hmm. wanted to do his honor mm-hmm. for his country. He wanted to serve, and he couldn't, you know, and at the very beginning of the movie, he gets in this fisticuffs mm-hmm. with a guy who's so much bigger than him, and then Bucky comes along and saves the day, and he's like, oh, I had him right where I want him, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But you get the relationship, and Bucky was about to go off to war.
Yep.
is about to be shipped out. So they had their one, they had their final night together. So when Bucky, and it's interesting when you look at the timeline, so then Bucky gets kidnapped, or he gets taken prisoner by Hydra. Mm-hmm. So they had already started their, when Steve Rogers as Captain America saves Bucky, he had already started the process of going through through Hydra's experiments with the soldier serum there. So, but you don't think of it that way because, because he captured him from a hospital room or the Hydra's lab. So they had already started his experiments at that time, but they don't beat you over the head with it. But he was captured because they were trying to make super soldiers. Mm-hmm. So they had started with that, and then Bucky meets his demise. He falls off the thing.
Before Bucky meets his demise, we do have the section where they worked together.
Right.
They had the teamwork, and they had this. I'm totally blanking on the name of what they were called, but they kind of had their own special unit.
Yeah, they had their own special unit.
So between Bucky getting shipped off and saving Captain America before he's Captain America,
right,
you do have that unity of where their friendship was even more built upon, because he went from being like his savior, protector, known as a
bond
kid,
to fire,
to, you know, bonding, people fighting together.
Absolutely.
And then you have the switch.
Right. And then I guess what I'm getting to is, like, so when you see that, it makes the leap that, oh, well, he was probably pumped with some semblance of the serum. I mean, you can make that assumption and probably be safe with it because he was already in that. He was not really cognizant. He's in a lab. So when
some experiment, though.
Right. So they had already started with him, being that it's his best friend. But when you're going into this, like, you sort of kind of, they did a really good job. Like, they said San Sebastian was in this, but they sort of hid San Sebastian. Like, unless you were really paying attention to the credits, and then you watch First Avenger, you go, oh, well, he must be the Winter Soldier. You know, or if you're a comic book reader. So, but that was going to be, for me, it would have been, like, unknown to me in a sense, but my friend Ryan's like, oh, he must be the Winter Soldier because he was being experimented on already and he can get grabbed the shield, and I'm like going, damn you, you're probably right. It's not going to be as big a reveal now, but
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I saw it coming. I mean, I didn't see it coming from the trailers. I saw it coming in within 3 minutes of the film. Like, I think it was.
What was the trigger?
I can't remember if it was the museum first or the flashback first, but like, I was like, okay, they're not putting two focuses on this guy for no reason. Like, because he had his own section in the exhibit, and they focus on him and not any of the other teammates. And on top, and I think there was like five of them. Oh, and on top of that, he was like the one
person.
Honestly,
I only took that because that was his best friend.
I didn't
see that as a foreshadow. And again, because I don't know, I mean, I was a fan of Captain America when I was a kid. I had the trash can lit as a shield. I had the whole thing. But I didn't read all the comics or anything like that. So I didn't know anything about the Winter Soldier. I didn't know anything about Beck. I didn't know any of that. So it was a good reveal to me because I didn't see it coming.
Hey, Marissa, how about you?
I saw it coming within a couple of minutes of the film.
I assumed that. Okay,
I didn't know from the trailers.
I assumed they were doing that because, okay, that's his best friend. Here he is. All my friends are gone. And even my best friend, the one I feel responsible for, all that kind of stuff.
You can also see little tricks, like if you recognize an actor's face. And like, I was just like, this guy looks familiar. He's going to have a
role. Yeah. Again, that was like about a week before sat down and watched the first Avenger. And it's like, oh, this San Sebastian. And he goes, oh, well, that makes sense why he's the Winter Soldier, because they were already experimenting on him. And I'm like going, damn it, that makes too much sense. That's probably going to be how it pans out. Marissa, how about you? Like, was the reveal a big shock to you? Or
yes and no, because exactly like you guys were talking about, the whole section there, he had his own section in the museum. I was like, okay, they're really focusing on him for something. But
but he was the only one that died.
Yeah.
He was.
They even said that he was the only one of the Rough Riders or whoever they were.
Yeah.
Who died
fighting for their country.
Exactly. Right. That's why he had his own thing, though. I thought it was covered.
Yeah, but I thought they did a great job, you know, going back and explaining the people to refresh our memories in that way, because I hadn't saw the first Captain America a while ago, and I couldn't really remember all the characters. Like I said earlier, I was like, that movie wasn't as memorable to me. Yeah. So reliving the people and who they were in Captain America's life and Steve Rogers' life.
Yeah.
I thought that was great how they, you know, just refreshed our memories in that.
Honestly, I didn't, even when he pulled the mask off and he said, I went, who the hell's that? I didn't recognize him. And I'm sure I have a little facial blindness.
He had long hair. No, he had long hair. I mean, they made him look, he definitely wasn't the clean cut American soldier that, you know. But
it was like punk rock.
Yeah. But when that happened in my theater, like you could hear everyone like,
wow,
humongous gasp.
That's great.
It was actually pretty.
Well,
helpful.
It worked for that audience. That's
there
terrific.
You go.
And how about the scene at the Smithsonian? Like, to me, that was a great scene.
Which with the kid?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. When Captain America, Steve Rogers goes.
Yeah.
Just because, again, this was a time where he feels like he literally is a man out of time.
Absolutely. And he is.
And he's got to go back to the Smithsonian
and the
just
fact
to
that
try
he,
to reminisce.
When he was running by Falcon, whatever his
Falcon, kid. Yeah.
And he has to write down. You know, he's writing down in his little booklet.
Sam Wilson.
What album to like is, you know, and the other things, Rocky 2.
Rocky,
it's
Star Wars.
It's a wonderful list. And the interesting thing that I found out, they switched that list for each release, like in every different country. They've added different things.
Oh, nice.
So they've really targeted for like the Mexico release. They're using historic pictures from Mexico. And so they've switched that all around the world. I know they did it. In France, I know they did it in the UK, where the Beatles were on the list. Mm-hmm. I know of, So not only are they planning their normal Easter eggs, but they also do.
We should try to look that up to see what was on his list.
I think that's a little bit of it. You guys keep talking.
That's a good idea.
No. I love the when we talk about great screenwriting or really good screenwriting. Great screenwriting. One of the things that I really loved is what a fantastic way to introduce a new character. And because the opening of the movie starts off, it's in the morning in D.C. And you see this one guy on a run.
Right.
And he's just running. He's running around. And all of a sudden, this other guy speeds up. On your left. Yeah. And he goes, all right, man. On your left. All right. And then he hears the footsteps. He goes, don't you dare say it. He goes, on your left. He goes, damn it. And you wonder, where's this going to go? And then they have the conversation by the tree. And it's a really great conversation. And he says, hey, you got to listen to Marvin Gaye, I believe. And he's giving him because he's, all right, I'll write that down. And then when Scarlett Johansson drives up, she goes, hey, guys. She goes, I'm going to the Smithsonian. Can somebody give me directions? I'm trying to look for a fossil. Oh, that's – I love how they were ripping him. And then
she was written extremely well.
Great. And so was it Anthony Mackie. And then,
You
know, when he's like, maybe I'll see you around if that's what you call running. Oh, is that how you're going to play? He goes, yeah, that's how I'm going to play that. And then at the very end, when Steve Rogers is in the hospital and he wakes up, his words to him wasn't hi or hey, it's on your left. And to me, that's a great tie-in. It's very smart. And they bring
soldier-like.
Him
it's very man thing.
And they bring that new character in as a great support. So, and again, we can talk about this later. Why isn't this like an Avengers movie? Well, he's built up his own. He's got Black Widow, he's got Falcon, and he's got his own thing going on. But it was the introduction of the character and how that character remained relevant. And how he had the sensibilities of trying to help other soldiers. I just thought it was very smart. And the recall at the end was brought it all home.
I wanna get into a little bit more about Falcon and Red Widow, but before I do that, just to let you guys know, this is off of IMDb's trivia section. Steve's to-do list of cultural events since World War II included I Love Lucy, The Moon Landing, Berlin Wall, which also had in parentheses Up or Down, Steve Jobs, Apple, Disco, Thai Food, Star Wars, and Star Trek. And Nirvana, Rocky, and Troubleman. And then what
I like
it says,
Rocky too. Question mark.
And then this person writes that it was different in the UK, where instead of I Love Lucy, the top is Sherlock. Also, the Berlin Wall. Are replaced by the Beatles, World Cup Final in 1966, and Sean Connery. For France, The Fifth Element is added, and for Australia, Tim Tams, which are a biscuit that are quite yummy. I've had them. And I know that there were others that have been put out there. I'd have
That's
to
great.
Really do some research. But yeah,
I love
so there.
And it helps with the, you know what? It doesn't hurt with the global box office.
Not at all.
No, people love that. So. But I want to add, I think that I was really surprised by the addition of Falcon.
Yeah.
I really didn't see him coming. And I thought it was interesting because for a split second, I was like, okay, are we replacing Hawkeye with Falcon? I was like, where's Hawkeye? Because typically wherever Red Widow goes, he's typically there. But I mean, then I was like, well, he did kind of get the Thor entry and she didn't. So I was like, are they dividing them?
And she got the Iron Man 2 entry, you know, checking up on Stark Industries.
Exactly. So it's interesting because I feel like they are, they're obviously like a pair.
But she had her little pennant.
Of the
which
arrow.
Was the arrow.
Which was Scarlett Johansson's idea. So, she brought that to the character to represent him. But I think that that's an interesting dichotomy. But I think that it worked in this. I feel like the balance of Falcon and Red Widow were done
Red Widow.
Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. I totally take that back. Don't hate me. I'm like, I even have my glasses. But I brought my glasses. They're hurt.
Oh, anyway. And if you go see it, you get... You get your choice of 3D glasses.
Yeah.
So they have Captain America, Winter Soldier, Black Widow, the Falcon. Yeah, it's pretty geeky. It's awesome, though.
So here's how out of the universe I am. Is Falcon part of the Marvel world?
Yeah, apparently. Okay. Yeah, apparently. Yeah, he
I
is.
Didn't even know. Again, even if he wasn't, it didn't matter to me because I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want? I want that pack.
Well, I love the line that says, I thought you said I was a. I thought you said you were a pilot. I never said I was a pilot. And I'm like, no, he didn't.
Nope,
so where's this going? Because I didn't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. And again, sometimes when you bring in too many characters, it can really muddle down things. Mm-hmm. But not
things
here.
Get diluted. No, they didn't.
Not here. And again, I really think that it was great because, again, now that we're going into Age of Ultron, now we have more Cap followers. You know, now Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson's, now she understands him. And she's like, you know what? This guy's on the level. Now we're going to, you know, whatever they do with Nick Fury and how he's going to fit into certain things, he has it. If Falcon ends up making a cameo or something, like, this movie really solidified Captain America's stature, in a sense.
He's again, giving the orders now.
Yeah. And to your point, now we see why Coulson really dug him.
Can follow him.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And in fact, that he's the one that's responsible for taking down S.H.I.E.L.D. Now they're all going to go, what the hell are you doing, Captain?
Right, yeah.
Now, okay, what are you? So what's your answer now that it's gone?
Yeah.
So that'll be exactly. That'll be interesting because, you know, well, where the hell's Nick? You know, so we're looking to you, Captain.
Yeah.
So that could be fun.
Yeah, I'm just like, so, like, my mind just goes, like, do they tell the rest of the Avengers that Nick Fury is still alive or whatever? Oh, and speaking, come on. How awesome was the Easter egg of Nick Fury's tombstone? The Path of the Righteous Man is like Pulp Fiction. I was like, that's awesome.
And I read it, but I didn't make the connection. I totally forgot.
Yeah, Sam Jackson's speech before he capped somebody up.
And we finally got his eye.
Yep.
That was... quite the interesting little layer. I also thought that his relationship with Scarlett Johansson or Agent Romanoff was wonderful, that they both, because they're both looked at as such these like isolated characters that are very hard exteriors, and that they have this bond.
Right.
It's like, I thought that was wonderful and why she gets so much intel and so much trust.
I liked how at the end, too, you had a character like Romanoff. It's great. Now, knowing how S.H.I.E.L.D. had been corrupted and S.H.I.E.L.D. had brought her to the light side, the good side, she is a character that's out of time.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't know where she fits in. No. She goes, I believed in this.
She said many lies that she doesn't know what to believe in.
Yep.
So it's great.
Yeah,
terrific.
Really, just smartly, just the way it was put together and everything, and even the hiring of Robert Redford. People are like, why is Robert Redford?
How'd they get him? You know,
well,
and Samuel Jackson was saying that. How the hell we get him?
Right. Yeah. And
it comes from the inspiration of the movie that they went after him.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was partly 3 days of the Condor. And and then, you know, to Robert Redford,
I have
grandchildren.
Yeah, exactly. And
it was like, I have grandchildren.
I want them to see me in a film.
Right.
Like, sure, why not? It's just to do all is lost and then this. It's like
one wonderful year.
Let me ask. Like, I mean, to me, it didn't bother me. You know, it's I'm going to call it the Richard Donner effect, because when Richard Donner was casting the original Superman, the Christopher Reeve Superman, you know, he was being pressured by the studio to hire somebody like a Robert Redford to play the role. And Richard Donner kept on saying, nay, nay. Mm-hmm. I say nay, nay because people will look at him and say, that's Robert Redford. Yeah. That's not Superman. So they went with Christopher Reeve. So in this movie was, did you have that? Like, cause I was like, do you think people are going, oh wow, that's Robert Redford? Or do you mm-hmm. think they're buying him as the character? Or is it just cool to see Robert Redford on screen?
Well, no matter,
and he's playing a bad guy.
I'm sure it will hit the gamut. I think there are people going to go, oh my God, that's Robert Redford. And as soon as that's over, they're just watching the movie.
Yeah.
And there are going to be other people that are going, I can only see Robert Redford. And there are plenty of people watching this movie who don't even know who the hell Robert Redford is.
That's true. Absolutely.
So. Very true. I think that, I mean, I like Robert Redford as an actor. I saw his Lost and whatnot. And I think that for me, it was just more interested to see him. He's portrayed as such like this like mm-hmm. wonderful Robert Redford mm-hmm. that he got to be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. I thought that was nice to see him on screen as, because yeah. I haven't seen much of him that way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him in that kind of a role.
No, and he didn't chew up the scenery too, mm. which sometimes when you put a
absolutely.
Villain in that role, they gotta yeah. be the focus of attention and they gotta chew every piece of scenery up. But he didn't. It was very understated. And
yeah.
to your point, even that scene, like it's even that scene where he says, you know, I would sacrifice
yeah.
to a million for the way he just casually says mm-hmm. it, like, you know, that he's that character believes, you know, in his goal, but
yeah,
he's not being like the mad. He wasn't Red Skull. He wasn't being like,
no.
Yeah, he wasn't being like the mad mm-hmm. person.
I have to say, though, because I loved, first of all, I think he's a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
Always thought that. I think he's sure. highly underrated for what he does because of obviously his looks and everything. But it was great to see him. The one thing that freaked me out was what you mentioned when he said Hail Hydra at the end. I went, okay, I do not want Robert Redford saying Hail Hydra. That was the only time I was like, okay, no, I can't take that one. I
luckily,
can't do
it was
that
preceded
one.
By one of my favorite scenes where the old woman.
That was amazing.
Oh, and
that
that's Jenny Agutter. All right, folks, like we got to talk about like. Well, that's Jenny Agutter,
yeah.
and okay, she's
love
been around.
That scene. I went
forever.
Yeah.
She, you know, I had a big time Jenny Agutter. She was
whoa.
In Logan's Run.
That was her.
Oh,
my God. I didn't even put
yeah,
it together.
My head. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Jenny Agutter in Logan's Run. I was like, as a kid seeing mm-hmm. that movie going, oh, who is she? Like, yeah. wow. It's like, huh, she was awesome. And then I'm watching the movie going, all right, who is she? Who is she? And I was like, that's Jenny Agutter? Like, you know, she's aged. I think she's aged gracefully.
She's beautiful.
But man, oh man, Oshevitz. Wow. It's just
great.
A coup to
that
see her
so
back.
Cool.
And that scene was such, awesome.
That was probably
when,
one
when
my
that happened
in
my crowd, that audience went nuts when that happened. They went, yeah. But it was great.
Yeah. And I'm glad they didn't continue, like.
Yeah.
I'm glad it came as a surprise.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'll refer back to
a British chick to do that. That
yeah.
Awesome.
And but the ripping off of the mask
yeah.
and everything, like there's a movie Mission Impossible 2,
yeah.
which so relied. It's like every single scene there was somebody ripping off mm-hmm. a mask. And this didn't have that effect mm-hmm. at all. You know, I know it seems like we might have some limited time, but one thing I wanted to talk about too is the music in this movie.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Silvestri scored mm-hmm. the first Avenger, and mm-hmm. this one going into this, a gentleman by the name of Henry Jackman did mm-hmm. this one. And what I think, and again, both movies are so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alan Silvestri, what he did with Captain America, he really made a hero's, like,
yeah.
you know, very horn, like a triumphant. He mm-hmm. captured the time period.
Yeah.
In this movie, what Henry Jackson is, he still has that in there. And just
and
so
just,
you know,
just,
he did
let
Captain
me make a note.
Go ahead.
Because you're talking about capturing that time period. The whole thing with Monuments Men and Captain America, that
right.
music.
Alexander Desplat, yeah.
Wasn't that interesting
right.
how they, okay.
So yeah, anyway, no,
you
no.
and I both like that.
Right, no, but it's a great recall.
Absolutely.
Because look at the time periods
yeah.
in which, and we talked about the music
yeah.
and how it affected Monuments mm-hmm. Men. In this one, we've got Captain America, he's mm-hmm. heroic, all American.
Yep.
And now though, when you listen, you know, this guy has done like Captain Phillips. He did X-Men First Class, Kick-Ass. And with this movie, the musical tones, well, number one, he does something. He makes themes. So if you look
yeah.
at the soundtrack, because I have it, There's not only Captain America, but there's Fury.
Yep.
There is Natalia. There's the Winter Soldier.
I have to say, I love it when composers actually make themes.
Me too.
They're great.
I agree.
More often than not, that they really help the movie and they support the movie, and it really drives me crazy when they don't use them. Mm-hmm. Because I think you just, I don't know, gets... I think it lacks.
Yeah.
The movie makes me wanting.
And Alan Silvestri, like, he even did, like, something for Bucky in the first Avenger. But in this one, I felt like when I listened to the soundtrack, the music here is to heighten tension, mm-hmm. suspense, you know, especially like the Nick Fury scene in the car. That's a great scene, right?
Great
and then how about then how about the overpass scene, you know, when the Winter Soldier is like after Cap, and you know, that scene too was inspired by when they were putting that scene together. It was inspired by the shootout scene in Heat.
Oh, wow.
They're like, oh, we want to, like, make, he goes, but how do we amp this up so that every turn our heroes go, like, how are they going to get out of this? Mm-hmm. But when you listen to the music of this soundtrack, it isn't so much to overwhelm what's going on, but it is meant to, I listen to it and it compliments and I rethink the scene. Really good job of music. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for more of the same from Alan Silvestri's great score, you're not going to get it with this one because it is completely different. The other thing that I really loved about this movie, we didn't talk about a lot, the heroes take their licks in this film.
Oh, that's the other thing. I love that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know, Captain America getting bullets. And I mean, that was great. And what's her name taking a shot?
She's actually facing someone who's the equivalent to him and who can take... He has to find a way besides his shield because it doesn't become a weapon. He has to rely on himself.
That's what I thought was great.
Yeah. I mean, they take their licks.
They do.
Even Falcon. I mean, the scene where Winter Soldier just grabs his wing and just wham.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, they each take their licks to a point where I was like, oh, that's not like Captain America took some gunshots.
Yeah.
Man. He wasn't
I thought that was great.
And I was like, what are they? I actually thought, because knowing in the comic books that Steve Rogers died, I'm like going, they're not going to kill him off this soon, are they? Like, because he's getting shot a lot in vital places. Yeah. I'm like, I appreciate it.
I thought it was terrific.
No spoilers. We don't know what's going to happen.
No, but that, we know Captain
America. They should, for crying out loud. For me, that just heightened the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they're not invincible as
well, of course, because if you take away the fact that they are, like, they're not, these aren't immortals. Mm-hmm. This isn't Thor. Like, they can die.
Exactly.
You don't know how
and
it's
that's
going
why I wanted
end.
To see, but even,
and
the,
then
even the fact
his
that
sacrifice
his cheek was cut
at the
and
end.
Had stitches at it.
Right.
And going, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it was like they weren't afraid to put these superheroes, and that's what I think makes a great superhero movie. That's why, you know, it's tough. It's tough making a Superman movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It really is. And, you know, and it's proven, but when you have a Captain America, and that's what I think I loved about, that's what I loved about Iron Man 3. It's because you strip Tony Stark of his armor, basically. He's without his armor for a good chunk of that movie. And when you strip Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, when you strip Batman of his suit, and he becomes
and his
a more right and his gadgets. Yeah. How does he overcome that? And that's what always is great about
the crazy fighting skills building. That he learned on a mountain.
Yeah, those things.
But even, you know, but he can't dodge a bullet, and he can't. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you, when you strip a character down? How do you do that? And Thor in the last Thor movie, like finding his place and dealing with his whatever's going on Asgard and stuff. So, but this movie to me was like, wow, superheroes took some damage, man, and they didn't shy away from it. Even when he was getting punched by the Winter Soldier,
absolutely.
Oh, I felt every single one of those. So yeah, and I know we just got
we got the sign.
So what else? What I mean, we could go on about this movie.
Because there's so much. You just get to with this series with Marvel, we just get to keep building and building and building. So I feel like we're in trouble because now all of our after shows are just going to get longer and longer.
Well, I was thinking about, okay, what would we do next? Because I wanted to wrap this up with, you know, a lot of times we talk about favorite scenes, and I honestly couldn't be able to pick one. I'd have to pick, because we just talked about the Nick Fury set piece and then the overpass set piece. I mean, there's so many of them that I could go to and I go, that was a great sequence.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I don't really have one.
I think that if I absolutely have, it is really hard because honestly, you're so impacted by the adrenaline of the action that I'm automatically thinking those, but I think that I have to go with the surprise route of when you get the after the reveal.
Oh, of her, yeah, that it's Black Widow who's doing that.
Yeah, that was great. I think that the elevator.
We didn't even talk to the elevator.
Oh my god, the elevator scene.
The elevator scene was a great scene. He's just.
Now, see,
and
yeah.
I mean, he knows, and I'm going, how long are they going to hold this? And, you know, he sees the sweat bead, he keeps going, and more people get on, and you know he knows, okay, this is what's going to happen, all right. Well, how long are they going to carry this out? And he finally says, anybody want to get on?
Yeah, it's before this goes down.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, the elevator scene, I saw that last October when I was at Show East, and they showed the entire scene, so it wasn't like it came to a surprise, but every time I've seen it, it never got any more boring. Like, I couldn't wait for it, but it's a great scene. You know, I mean, for me, I talked about the Smithsonian scene. Mm-hmm. Oh, I also love the scene where he talks to, God, why do I keep on forgetting that character's name?
Yola.
Haley, Peggy Carter. Oh. When he sees, when he goes to visit, because that's a scene where he's like, you know, you still my girl, you know. You know, you still owe me that dance.
He's still trying to hang on to the innocence of his youth.
Yeah, and like, but it was a very, it wasn't done cheesy. It was done very nice and sentimental, and it really put our character, he's like, again, he's like struggling, like, I don't think I fit here. And going back to her, that the character is still alive, and what they did with Hayley Atwell, too. I thought it was another actress. Mm-hmm. I only learned today that it was done CG and such.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that was great. So, yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to do something that exceeded makeup, so they actually went through and they like changed her muscle structure so that it would actually be what could happen as she aged.
See, so what are we worried about them aging then? They'll just reverse the process.
That's what I said.
Yes.
So,
I'll just put those muscles back in place.
Here's something that we didn't talk about, and I wanted to bring up because it was a big deal for the writers and the directors, right, as to how this one scene was going to work. Would audiences buy it or not? And that was the Dr. Arnim Zola. Like, they like, here
the
we have
computers this, and all the
computers. And, you know, my first thought was, Transcendence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
But I'm like going, okay, is this going to work? Because their big thing was, we had to write this and so, because we know we're switching gears really fast. Mm-hmm. We're going from political conspiracy thriller to sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Are we going to buy it? But we knew that this was a key scene in the movie because it's going to wrap everything up. And I thought the way that it was handled, it made sense. Like, you know.
I can agree, but it was the least successful scene for me.
Uh-huh.
I would also agree because it's a hard battle to fight because there are movies coming out right now where everything's so like it's existing in the cloud. Mm-hmm, yeah. And I'm like, this gave a physical representation. So when like he hit the screen, I was like, set fire to the building. Set fire to the building and we're all good. I was
like, somehow he has a consciousness that survived here and that he's able to converse with them real time. It's like, that was like,
I needed it to be somehow expanded outside of that room. To me, it was too contained in that room. So it was too easily to destroy or control. And it wasn't, I had to try and connect a lot of dots myself as to how it was working from inside of this, like, desolate place and how he had branched out and gotten to these crazy technologies of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that to me, I didn't quite make sense.
I know, because the big computers with the
spinning wrist. Then there's the one little thing.
But,
and like, well,
but I loved it because 3 Days of the Condor, when the computer place gets hit, like it's those kind of computers.
Yeah,
and then I was also thinking was, $6 million Man.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we got to go.
Oh, damn
we
it.
We have to go. I'm sorry.
Damn
we got to go.
It. I know.
All right. Marissa, where is it that people can?
They can follow us on Twitter at Movie Anatomy and then check out our website, anatomyofamovie.com.
And
all
obviously,
last thoughts.
Well, obviously, I feel like we all could talk a
we
lot more on this,
yeah,
and I'm sure people listening could too. Yeah. So if you have anything to say or add to the conversation, feel free to comment. Overall, I think that this was a fun, fantastic movie that had wonderful pacing and did a lot of character growth for multiple characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's adding to the franchise and definitely bringing more people in.
I loved it. Thanks again to Cinemark. And if this is a harbinger as to what our summer movies are going to be like, we're in for one hell of a ride. Soldier on, everyone.
Marissa, what do you have to say? Last words.
Yes, again, fun movie. I can't wait for more Marvel movies to come in the future. And then I thought as a sequel to its first movie, it did better than the first one.
Yeah, I so completely I, agree.
Overall,
with that.
A very solid movie.
And I liked the first one, too. I just thought that this was a just a great movie. And again, like you, I'm going, really? This isn't your summer movie? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's the first summer, non-summer movie.
I know, because this thing, it's like, this thing should be in May, at the end of May. Why is this thing now?
Yeah,
got more cameras.
I know.
It has 95 million reasons why, yeah. And 320 million worldwide, and it's all because of all the note changes that they made.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, look, we got to get out of here. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next time. We're out.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.